Here we go. Cameron Bovier trying to go 4-for-4 in the first two races of the season. The field ready to do battle with the Californian. Revs are up. We're on our way.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 637. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicroy, and joining me, of course, today, as ever, is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, man?
It's great. I'm excited. We actually have a calendar. Believe it or not, there is a calendar. We now know that racing will happen. Isn't that amazing? Sounds too good to be true.
It is amazing, and we got like all the calendars too, because once the big boys put out their calendars, you know, we got everything. If you are a motorsports fan, two and four wheel, and whatever kind of tracks you like, you are about to have a great 3 months, because every weekend there's something, if not two to three events going on. It's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's very nuts. I mean, look, Supercross has been racing. Tonight is the final race of the Supercross season. We'll see if Eli Tomac can win the title. He has a 24-point lead over Cooper Webb, so that's going to be interesting. A shout out to Ken Roczen, as far as he's battling the shingles now. Like, that guy hasn't been through enough. Two arms that have basically almost been cut off, and now he's got shingles on top of it. But man, it doesn't get him down. He just keeps on trying. So a quick shout out there to Ken. If you're not watching Supercross, you probably should. It's been pretty good. They've been, all the races have been in Utah at Rice Eccles Stadium on the University there of Utah. And they've been pretty, it's been some pretty good racing. I will say that.
Cool. I'll have to check it out. I keep forgetting that it's going on. I feel like the with the way the world's going, I've been paying a lot less attention to my racing, so I don't get my advertising updates. And so I'm like, oh, crap, I forget that this is going on. So it'll give me something to look forward to in the next couple of weeks. I'll kind of catch up with everything in the Supercross world as we wait for our road racing to start.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of start, this show, you know, we couldn't get going without having the lovely donators that keep us running, keep us afloat here. And just like some of our recent donors that we had that are real cool friends of the show, and that's Alan Fleming, Keith Kovac, Nick Saban, and Scott Saunter. Thank you, gentlemen, for your kind donations. Remember, people, if you want to be a kind donor, just like those names I mentioned, you can go ahead and head over to our website. That's motopodcast.com. On the left-hand side, you'll see a donate button. You can do a one-time donation, or you can sign up for a subscription for as little as $2, $1. It doesn't matter. Anything helps the show, keeps us going. You guys know the spiel. And then if PayPal's not your thing, we have our Patreon site. That's patreon.com/motopod. You can use there to go through as well for any donations. All right, and we've got some listener feedback this week. Steve Riling, who is definitely a friend of the show, there goes, hey guys, I hear there's a season about to start. So it's only fitting I found an excellent craft Italian-style pills called Agostini. And so Steve is right up my boat here. He goes, I recommend it. It's from Vaunt Ebert Brewing in Portland, Oregon. So not too far from here. And he sent some pictures in below. And he goes, looks like he located a store that's actually in the Bay Area that's not too far. I think this is about a 15-minute drive for me. So I will have to venture off in the coming weeks before the show. I think I'll save... that beer for the first race of the season, which is in a few weeks' time. So Steve says, celebrate the sound of speed early, celebrate during, celebrate after. You must respect the Agostini. Anyways, cheers to the new season. Steve, thanks for the recommendation and for writing in. I will definitely be grabbing a pack of that for when the season starts, and that will start our first beer review / race review of the season. And Jim, saying race review is very exciting.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It's been so long. And now it's like it's getting so tantalizingly close. I feel like we are getting to the final two tests of the new year, and we're all the speculation will come out, and we're going to go racing. And we're just
That's right there on that cusp,
you know? I mean, it seems like it's been so long since there's been any racing, and yet the Moto 2 and Moto 3 guys raced in Qatar. You know, I mean, but it feels like it's been forever, at least to me. I mean, I know there's
when
a lot
was
of
that?
People.
Was like, oh, so long ago, March, back in March, right?
It had to be. It had to have been before March the 12th. That I know, because that date's going to be etched into my head forever, only because of the fact that I was supposed to go to a NHL hockey game that I had tickets for that night, and they had said that, oh, the game won't be played in front of fans. And I thought, wow, that's really weird. And then they wound up canceling the season. I think a day on that day, on that morning, they canceled the season. So, I mean, hey, but everybody seems to have a calendar now, right? I mean, that sort of seems to be the thing that's going on. The NHL has said that, hey, we're going to go to training camps in July 10th or on or about the July 10th. We've got some firm dates. We've got Supercross running again. IndyCar, NASCAR here in the States is all running. And so it's only fitting that MotoGP throw out a calendar. So I give you, without further ado, the 2020 MotoGP calendar. Can I get a round of applause? Thank you. Thank you. All right. So thank you. So basically, here's how it goes. We go to Spain and we start in at Jerez on July the 19th. A week later, we have another race at Jerez. Then we take a week off. We go to Brno. We take a week off. Then we go to the Red Bull Ring in Austria. We go back to back with another race right after that. And then strangely, Brno and the two rounds in Austria are back to back to back. So we're going to go three races in 3 weekends. Then mysteriously, we get 3 weekends off. Not sure why, but we do. And then we go to Misano, and we race in Misano 2 weekends back-to-back. And then we have a third race then in Catalonia. So that's not until September the 27th. And then after that, we move over to Le Mans in October 11th. And we go to Motorland Aragon on the 18th of October, followed by the 25th of October for two rounds there. And then two rounds at Valencia on November 8th and 15th. So that gives you 13 races over 18 weekends. And the possibility of us going to as many as 17 rounds, because the Circuit of the Americas, the race in Argentina, and the Chang Circuit in Thailand, and the Sepang Circuit are all tentative at this point. Now, will these flyaway races happen? We don't know. But we will know whether we are going to have racing there by July 31st. That's the drop dead date. So everybody hold on to your hats and figure out what's going on there. So what do you think of that calendar, Skyler? What jumps off at it to you?
I mean, it's obviously cool to have a calendar.
Yeah.
Seeing the I think there's a lot of opportunity for breaking some track records when you have these back-to-backs, because these setups are going to be so fine-tuned coming off one race weekend. And I think the second race that's always held the following weekend, as long as the riders don't get injured, may actually be a closer race, because, I mean, we've seen in testing, right, over a three-day period, it seems like everyone gets within, like, 1 second because they've had time to really dial their bike in. But you don't see that same kind of thing on the race weekend, with some teams get it together much quicker than others, some go the wrong direction. So if you got, you know, a whole another race weekend and a week in between to kind of fine-tune, and you don't have to unpack and pack, you really can't just work on the bike, there's going to be interesting races, I think, in the those double headers.
Yeah, I think the double headers are going to be what's interesting. I think the thing that jumps off the calendar at me is all the Spanish rounds. So two in Jerez, two at Aragon, two at Valencia, and then you have only the one round there in Catalonia, which is interesting that there's only the one round there. So thought that was kind of unique. But, you know, this is probably the best that we could actually hope for. I mean, we're getting 13 races. I don't think anyone's going to complain at this point that we didn't get all 20 rounds this year or whatever the number was supposed to be. But I ask you this. Do you think the flyaway races are going to happen?
I don't think so, to be honest.
I agree with you.
They're going to get to the end of July. And I mean, since we've kind of opened things back up, we're already seeing an increase and the amount of cases of coronavirus, and I think we're just going to continue on that path, to be honest. And I think they're going to just be like, listen, let's just keep what we got. We can control this really well. We don't need to throw in the mix of trying to go overseas and the logistical nightmare that is. And I'm kind of just looking at November 15th as the end date. That probably means they're going to have to jump to the United States at least a week, if not two, right after that, and then try to land in Argentina the week after that. And then, you know, you're trying to do every other week here for these last four and pushing yourself all the way to the end of the year. That's going to be pretty tough and a tall task. And I can see Sepang and the Chang circuit being okay because of the weather. Argentina and South America, so that'll be coming good as well. So really, the Circuit of Americas would be the questionable one that late in the year as far as weather and how the bikes would, you know, handle all of that. But I just don't think they're going to do it. I just think they're going to hit Valencia and call it a season.
Yeah, I think they will too. I think they will call it. My reasoning is this. One, I think everybody is going to be burnt out. 13 races mm-hmm. and 18 weekends is going to grind the living snot out of everybody who's there. Plus, you're trying to do this on a very minimal crew. What are they down to? Like maybe 50 people of the 100 that are generally there. Everybody's going to basically be traveling around in a caravan together. They're all going to go to the same places at the same time. And I think that they're just going to be like, hey, we fulfilled our contractual obligations to have enough rounds to be considered a world championship. We've got the TV revenue from it because we have to go racing because Dorna cannot continue to subsidize the smaller teams on the grid. There's no way that it's an unsurvivable situation if they don't go racing. So everybody right. kind of comes out of it happy. And I think it also then, you know, you're finishing off sort of in the normal time where we expect the season to end, sort of that second week of November. Is generally, hey, season's done. I don't think anybody's going to want to go any longer. You know, I don't think the weather in Texas would be bad for the race. I think it'd be pretty close, maybe a little cooler than it is when we go there in April. Maybe some rain, which could be interesting, but I just can't see it happening at all. So we won't know until July 31st, but I'll venture that we're not going to Coda. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, and you know, July 31st sounds like a far away, but that's only 5 weeks away, yeah. right? And that's only, they're going to get two races in prior to that decision being made. So they may also get kind of a feel just in those two races. I think that's what they're looking at, is how manageable is this MotoGP circus with a skeleton crew. Yep. And if they want to try to take the skeleton crew overseas, which might be a little bit more difficult to get everything managed because everything has to be packed and unpacked and not just put in a truck. Like, you got to get them off shipping containers, off the planes, everything else. It's like, okay, that's a bit more work. And it definitely can, you know, like I said, they can travel as a caravan and everything else when they're doing the within, you know, country and especially within the continent. But then start those flyaways, it's a whole different ball game.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, definitely that. So I see here you've got a point to say, you know, who do we think this championship flatters? Who does it hurt? So I'm thinking, of course, you know, if Casey Stoner was still here, we would just give him the championship, you know, because he can get a bike dialed in about 3 minutes, it seems like. but you know, it's going to hurt the rookies. Or, you know, the people with less experience. I mean, that's first and foremost. That will be the biggest. Anyone that has a bike that's not quite up to snuff. So we really haven't seen the bikes this year. Who, you know, mm-hmm. who's working with the specific tire and who's not. And did anybody get it figured out? But I would say definitely it's going to, you know, really be the same guys who are going to do well from this. I think Marquez is... going to be, you know, after especially having all this time to heal up, that yeah. was super beneficial for him.
That was the main point I was saying, is like, look, you had Marquez. I don't want to say he was on the ribs. That's not the right words here, but hey, he was hurting from a shoulder injury that had not fully healed yet. Mm-hmm. So you kind of had to think that coming out of the box, Quartararo was mm-hmm. going to be in a better position than Mark was. Mm-hmm. Now, call it luck, call it fate, call it whatever you want. Marquez has had another, 3 to 6 months to heal that shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's coming in. I saw some video from Marquez's Instagram last week on a CR250 just like pounding across a set of whoops. Now, you're not going to pound a set of whoops with a bad shoulder. Just
nope,
not happening. So that's that way. But what I was thinking is if we look at it, we break it down. Let's break it down. So we're going to be in Spain at Jerez. Who do you favor at Jerez?
It's got to be Marquez.
Really?
I don't know who else is going to come out this year and really put it unless Dovi and Ducati got something. But
Quartararo.
Yeah.
I mean, Quattro was on pole there.
Where the Yamaha's at.
Right?
Yeah.
Him and Morbidelli both look good. It is, in my mind, a bit of a Yamaha track because it's a lot of corner speed. It's a lot of on the edge of the tire. Mm-hmm. So I'll give the nod, at least in the very first race there, to Quattro. And then...
So I'm thinking that's where the Czech Republic is when Quattro. That's when we'll see if the Yamaha got a few more horsepower at the top end, for sure they're going to be super dangerous at Brno.
Right. But I think that's a Marquez kind of a track, if not Ducati, right? I think then you go to Austria. Wow, I keep wanting to say Australia. And we know that is a Dovizioso happy hunting ground.
Oh, yeah.
Because he hasn't been beaten there since we've shown up there. Now, Marquez has been trying like hell to beat him and has come very close. So you got to think that that's going to be a knockout ding-dong battle, and you can kind of see Dovizioso getting the first race victory, but that second race is going to be a whole lot tighter with Marquez, because whatever mistake Marquez made the first time, he's not going to make the second time, and you can only imagine that the Yamahas are going to be closer than they were. So then you move
into... God, you got to hope so.
Well, you got to hope so. I think they are. But I think we're also forgetting somebody very important. We're forgetting, where does Alex Rins fit into all of this? Because at the very last tests, Rins was the only guy who had race pace. Quartararo was...
This is true.
Quartararo was definitely fast on the Yamaha. I'm not going to dissuade you from that theory. But Rins had race pace, and he had that Chelsire cat grin on his face. So he fits into that mix somewhere. I mean, and he could surprise you and come out at the very beginning of this on a track like Jerez and take a victory, maybe a second, maybe a first and a second. That's not unheard of. But I don't see the Suzuki playing with the big boys at Brno. I don't see the Suzuki playing with the big boys at Austria. It's a horsepower track, and I don't think the Suzuki's got the horsepower yet. But then you get to Misano. I think that swings back towards the Yamaha, towards Rins a little bit more, right? Handling circuit. Got to be good on the brakes. A lot of time on the edge of the tire. Hey, Marquez is fast there, but everybody's coming for him. And with two races there, I think it gives everybody, like you said, that's a chance to dial it in and make it really something special. Then we go back to Barcelona. And you got to think, with the big long straightaway, maybe favors Ducati a little bit, favors Honda a little bit with Marquez. So that one's probably a Honda or a Ducati win. You go to Le Mans, and that one I think is an up-for-grabs kind of thing. Now, we know the Yamahas are strong there, but they've always had sort of a tire problem, tire trouble kind of thing, at least for a little bit there, once we got onto the Michelins and off of the Bridgestones. Marquez has had numerous crashes there, folding the front going into that first chicane. So, you know, this one I think is a Rins race. I think if Rins wins any of them, I think he wins Le Mans. And we've never really been there in October, although I'm going to think that being there in early May and being there in middle of October are probably going to be close to the same, I would think, temperature-wise. But that's definitely different. It's not where we're used to being. Well, then you go to Motoland Aragon. I think we might as well just hand two victories there to Marquez, right?
Well, the Ducatis might have something. Dovizioso is strong there as well. Yeah. I mean,
I don't doubt that.
And that might be where I'll put in my surprise of the year. This is where you will see a KTM finishing in the top five.
Ooh, love that. Love that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see that. Mm-hmm. And then you finish off at Valencia, right? And so Marquez has won there. Ducatis have won there in the past with Stoner, Bayless, and haven't really done anything recently. What, Jorge won there in his last championship year, which was, 2014?
2014, yeah. 2015. I was doing the same thing, too. I was like,
so it's possible. I mean, you could throw Quattro into that mix there, too. But if you look at it, I think there's only five tracks that we think that Marquez has more than a legitimate shot at winning, right? I think that's Brno. I think it's the two rounds in Austria, the two rounds at Motoland Aragon. Based on his record, you got to think he's going to be at or near the front there. after that, I think it becomes a very tossed up situation based on what happened at the beginning of the year in testing and what we know happened there. And, but this is so topsy-turvy, flippy-floppy, every which direction, that we could be completely wrong, and it could be one of the most wildest, craziest seasons ever, because if anybody crashes and anybody gets hurt, that's pretty much their title chance over. Because it's when are they going to heal? I mean, collarbones are not a commonly broken item now, but if you did fall, crash, break a collarbone, which is entirely possible, there's going to be three races that could possibly be ran before you could get back on the bike. At a minimum, at least maybe two, you know? So it all remains to be seen. I mean, it's all to play for, and it's speculative, but I just love speculating right now because it seems like what we should be doing.
Right? And I mean, that's what to look forward to with the season. It's so many unknown variables that were going to be taking place. It's a situation like we've never had before. And, you know, these bikes, they did get shakedown and tests, so we got a small peek at what they were doing. But, man, that's February, you know?
Yeah, that's a long time ago. That's 4 months ago, right?
And,
five months ago.
Now, are they doing... Yeah, they are doing testing. Yeah, I was like, are they doing testing? I was just reading about that the other day.
Are Aprilia and KTM.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only ones who are going to have any current data from their motorcycles that they're going to be able to use and apply.
Hey, you know, that's an interesting one too. Aprilia and Aleix Espargaró, because that bike is better. And, you know, Aleix, we know Aleix can stick it in the top five. He'll get in there and he'll box it out. I mean, even if he doesn't have the bike to do it, he can still somehow will his way up towards the front. At a track like Jerez, where it's not so much horsepower dedicated, but he was saying they've made huge improvements with that bike and its power delivery and just overall his satisfaction and comfort level and confidence with the bike, which is a main thing. They could surprise you at Jerez, you know, kind of catching, you know, some teams that maybe, you know, sitting on the back foot, especially with him, you know, coming off of testing and kind of getting the cobwebs out. That's a, you know, a strong possibility that Aprilia might get some big haul of points away from those first two races.
Oh, anything can happen in this. I mean, if 2020 has taught us anything, expect the unexpected. And when you expect the unexpected, make sure that what you thought of is so far out, far-fetched, and crazy and out there that no one would ever believe that it would happen anyway. So go with it that way, my friend.
Seriously.
So, hell, man, we could come out in the first race and a Aleix on the Aprilia could win the whole damn thing.
It's true.
I mean, it can be that crazy. There could be so many mixed up, flip-floppy, topsy-turvy things that happen. It's going to be wild. I just think this is going to be so incredibly wild of a season just based on what we have the ability to look at and what we can see and what we know for right now with the brakes and all that. Because the first race, somebody's going to be rusty. I mean, you can ride your dirt bike, you can do super moto, you could get on your super bike, but you cannot simulate the racing until you race. I was this way as a riding club. Man, I could go out, and if I had a track day, I could run consistent laps over and over and over and over again, but I really couldn't go faster. But come race, and you turn a green flag on, I could find a half a second that I couldn't find if I'm just out there practicing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these guys are going to have to face that part of it too, that they're going to come in, they're going to be a little bit rusty, and they're going to have to shake some cobwebs out of their brains. And I saw it in the Supercross guys. You know, they hadn't raced in basically 3 months. They got in there. You could tell their timing was a little bit off. Some guys were late out of the gate when you know that they're a good starter. You could see there was some tentativeness on lines and picking things and just the timing of the rhythm and how you were going to get through a rhythm section and when you're going to put that block pass in. They were all just a little bit off. Now, they were fine after the first weekend, because they had that time to be able to, you know, get their brain back to speed again. And that's one of the things I think that a lot of people don't really get is how mental all this is going to be. And you're going to have to try to be strong mentally. You're going to have to be probably stronger than you usually are mentally, because there's going to be so much flying at you. It's going to be compacted and thrown into you. And I think that's where these, starting off with a back-to-back weekend, you know, race schedule, is really going to help these guys sort of ease into it, because they can sit down and really analyze what they did right, what they did wrong, look at the areas that they need to improve, and instead of trying to overlay that onto a track that does not have a characteristic that's close to what Jerez is, they're going right back to that same track. So, as you said, and I think you correctly pointed this out, look for track records, look for some unbelievably fast pace happening, because they're going to dial in and dial in quick, especially in that second set. It's going to be, I'm just so excited right now. I really shouldn't be, but I am. I'm giddy like a, you know, I don't know. I'm just giddy. I'm just happy. I'm just, yes, there's a date, you know?
All right. I mean, this is just like how we typically feel in February after we get those first tests, like in Malaysia, we're like, hey, the season's almost there. And then we get those final tests in Qatar. And that's that feeling you're like, oh man, it's about to go. Here comes the show. It's another year. And the year has officially started. You know, summer's almost here. It's great times. And that was all pushed back by so many months this year. So all that, I think the big thing here is that you're catching up with that feeling, right? Where you had to squash it down for a little while. It's coming back up. It's going to be like, oh, man, not only do I need to get racing started, I just need to absorb, because I need to make up for lost time.
Yeah, I agree. It's that whole, this is those feelings that you have as you come out of winter and, no, they're going testing now. And you start to get amped up because this is what you love. It's motorcycles, it's racing, and it's what you love. It is what makes you get out of bed in the morning. It's what makes you work really hard so that you can have those vacation days and the money to go to the track to see these guys. It's all those feelings are bubbling to the surface, and you just are wanting to become this ball of energy that you can just want to unleash. And wouldn't be surprised that, you know, the riders aren't feeling the same thing. I think there's going to be a lot of energy. I think there's going to be a lot of aggression that they're going to work out in the first couple races. I mean, you know, again, crazy things can happen. You know, somebody's going to screw up turn one and knock down a couple of guys. It's just going to happen. And it's going to depend on who got the start and where it is. And I just can't wait to watch.
No, I agree. It's going to be good and exciting. And we're only a few weeks away. So, and continuing with the news here, Johnny Reyes continue his contract with Kawasaki through 2021. I find a couple interesting things with that. One, that he's sticking with Kawasaki. I don't think Johnny's going anywhere after this. I think this may even be Johnny's last contract. And I don't mean like he's like going downhill or anything, but he's got, you know, his kids are getting bigger. You see more and more his, you know, he's taking more, or not taking more, he's doing more things with them, going out and riding bikes with them and go-karts and everything else. And I can't see anybody really putting a stop into him in the next couple of years. So he may get another championship or two. Then what else is there to do? You know, I mean, I'm sure he still enjoys racing, but Johnny Reyes has been doing this for quite some time. Mm-hmm. He's probably got a few bucks in the bank that he doesn't have to really worry about much going forward with his life. And his focus may shift over to his kids and wanting to do more with them, because they're going to require more of his time the older they get. And I just, that, you know, we may just be seeing the final couple years here of Johnny Ray.
Yep, I agree with you. I mean, this is one of the odd effects of quarantine. Guys who were nearing the end of their career and thought, hey, I'll ride 2, 3, 4 more years, got a real taste of what life is going to be like post-motorcycling. And they are seeing, hey, this is family time that I never had, and I really enjoy this. I enjoy being with my kids. I enjoy go-karting with them, riding motorcycles with them, bicycles, whatever it is. And, you know, that's going to weigh on some of the older guys' minds. And, yeah, I mean, Johnny Ray has absolutely zero to prove on a motorcycle. So if he's doing it, he's doing it because he wants to, because he loves it. and why not? And he's on a good team. They've obviously got a great bike. Nobody's really coming with anything that I think is, you know, super competitive against the Kawasaki. The Panigale has its moments, but it's not there just yet. So what, we've only had what, one season with the Panigale last year, I think.
Yeah, I'd have to. So it's been a little bit. I need to go back and freshen up on my World Superbike, but then again, that's not where our focus is.
I think
the primarily
Panigale's
for
been
this,
out
but,
for like a year longer than it raced in World Superbike because it wasn't. They didn't get it homologated properly, or there was something that prevented them.
Well, they
from,
ran it in super stock the first year to kind of dial it in,
yeah,
and then they put the superbike together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was. That's, yeah. So Panigale's been around longer than it's actually been racing in World Superbike, but still, it's a different beast, and it's going to take a little bit for them to assert their dominance over everything. But, well, let's move on. Let's do some more rider rumors, if you will. So I think this one's pretty much the bombshell of them all, and it was reported on MotoGP.com that Pol Espargaró has a contract offer to race for HRC in 2021. Boom! Who has
yeah,
that
who saw
one
that
in
coming?
Sorry, yeah. Good.
Oh no, I think I just stole your thunder there. I was just saying, who saw that coming? I mean,
yeah.
No one talked about this.
But it makes a lot of sense. If you stop and think about it for a minute, it makes a lot of sense. Because we know Pol rides that, basically grabs that KTM and rides it by the scruff, grabs it by the scruff of the neck. I'll try that in English here. And rides the wheels off of it. And that's sort of the way Marquez rides that Honda. I think their two styles are really, really similar to each other. And we know that the bikes are both V4, 90 degrees. So there's not going to be a lot of dissimilarity in the bikes themselves. It's not like moving from a V4 to the Suzuki inline 4, which is going to be a completely different beast.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that to be shocking that HRC has a contract there for him. And he even says in the video, hey, you know, that's the bike everybody wants to ride. That's the bike that's winning, and that's the bike that everybody wants to ride. And I think, you know, we use this analogy a lot. We go to Formula One to compare. It's sort of like the allure of Ferrari. If Ferrari comes to you and hands you a contract and says, we would like you to race for us, you really don't turn down that contract. I don't think I've known anybody who turns down that contract to go race for Ferrari. I think HRC sort of holds that same mystique, if you will. Hey, these are the guys who are the creme de la creme of motorcycle racers and teams.
Right, and when you go to a team like that, if it doesn't work out and you fall back, you're not falling back far. It isn't like you went to Aventia and didn't make it, right? You went to factory Honda. You're still going to get picked up by other factory teams. You're still going to have, you know, opportunities, and you can still go back to KTM. This is kind of one of those things where it'd be really cool to see Pol, even though he's probably got, you know, a bit of his heart with KTM because they kind of, you know, picked him up and they've built the bike around him, and he's done really well for them. But at the same time, you know, you got to know you're on a clock. The guy that you came into MotoGP with and used to bang bars with in Moto2, he's got 5 championships.
Yeah.
And so you're like, man, I need to get some of that, at least one. And the old adage, if you can't beat him, join him. So, you know, this would be a strong move for Pol. And like you said, his style does match up. And, you know, at least, you know, people forget Pol was really the only guy that gave it to Marquez in Moto2 regularly. At the front. I mean, those guys would run away and just leave everybody in the dust. Now, not every race, but I think when we saw Pol come up to MotoGP and he went to the Tech 3 team, right? Mm-hmm. We were kind of expecting big things out of there, and it didn't quite work out the way that, you know, he probably wanted it to or Yamaha did, but he wasn't slow, not by any measure. It just didn't go where we thought it was going to go and have him jump into the factory team. There's so many factors into that, but it's definitely, you know, a move that I, you know, to me, it's almost like a no-brainer, right? You take a shot, it's a year or two, and if it doesn't work out, just go back with what you know.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, Rossi has to fall off the grid here, so that would leave a Petronas spot open, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you showed even halfway decent with the Honda, you would be more than likely to grab that spot. People would be crazy to not let you have that spot. It's more of an audition as well, as you said, for all the other riders. For all the other teams to look at you on the best equipment and see what you can do with it against arguably the best rider on the grid as of right now. So it's just interesting because what happens then to Alex? We all know he signed a 1-year deal, and we all know that HRC was definitely caught off guard by Lorenzo saying, not going to ride this bike anymore. So I would like to very much leave and not race a motorcycle with you again. So they had to find someone. By the time this was all announced, it was the end of the year. We were at Valencia. Who were you going to get to put on the bike other than maybe Alex? What say you of all this? What you make of all this?
So I think what this is, this kind of gives Honda all the eggs in one basket because they have another team that they put their contracted riders on all the time. And that would be Cal Crutchlow's team.
LCR.
LCR, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Cal Crutchlow is definitely winding his years down.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're going to see here, what happens next is all going to be dependent upon the season.
Sure.
I don't think any of us are expecting Alex Marquez to come in and do big things. I think it's going to be a learning year. It's a hard bike. I think him snagging some top tens, that's where he's going to be. Now, if he does better than that and starts squeezing up those top fives on a regular basis, and which is still tough in a shortened season, but then again, those doubleheader weekends help. We see him do well. Does Honda know something we don't know? Is Cal thinking this might be his last year and then he might want to step away? Or is maybe Honda wanting to step away from Cal because they could still bring in Pol on a factory contract, keep Alex on a factory contract, and just slide Alex over to the LCR team? Or maybe Taka doesn't work out, although I can't really see them pushing a Japanese rider out because that's what they really, really want. But yeah, there's definitely opportunities for Alex still within Honda in MotoGP. Now, if he comes out and just has a disaster of a year, I mean, he, you know, obviously has the opportunity to probably go back to Moto2. I don't know where else he would land in MotoGP because his resume, or for our friends overseas, his CV, would not be long enough or have enough experience to show the other teams that he's worth taking a risk on, right? Like, oh, he's going to learn. It's like you don't really want to take that risk all the time, especially when it's going to be really competitive here in the next couple of years before some of these, you know, guys like Dovizioso and Rossi step away. After that, some more seats open up, and you've really got to reevaluate the talent, especially in Moto2, and Marquez can be right there waiting once again. So this is definitely something we're going to have to monitor for the year. But the way I see it playing out, it might just depend upon who wants to stay in MotoGP and how their season goes.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the what does Honda know that we don't know? And I think you're right. Cal has said that he's not looking to ride much longer. So if Cal has said, hey, you know, this is it, I'm done after this year, or he's seriously thinking about it, then that gives you the opportunity to put Alex on Cal's bike. Now, would they, if Cal continues, would HRC take Nakagami and push him off the bike? I don't think so. I can't see that happening. Now, does that mean that HRC comes back and somehow magically finds a third motorcycle? Because they don't owe Alex anything after this year. He has a 1-year contract. And I'm pretty sure there's no pandemic, there's no pandemic clauses in that contract that says, well, hey, I didn't race all 20 races, so you owe me 7 more races or whatever it comes out to be. Although that is an interesting point. You have to wonder if after this we are going to start to see some pandemic language into contracts.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, and that's how most things get built in. It happens to one person, and everybody puts protections in against that, right?
Right.
It's just, you know, that you don't get flood insurance until you see someone else's house float down the river. You're like, well, shit, I guess I should get flood insurance. So it's there's definitely...
It's like living here in the Midwest. It's, you know, I actually have the $5 earthquake rider on my house. It's like, you know all about earthquakes, right? Like, oh, yeah. You have one every other day. Like, we don't have those here. But the problem is the tectonic plates that are here, if they shift, it's going to be disastrous for like a 500-mile radius, because it's going to be like a magnitude 10 earthquake.
Yep.
So, but yeah, it leads us to believe that Alex is nothing more than the insurance policy that Honda needed. They took what they could. They got him out. They were able to get him out of Mark VDS. They're able to get him on the bike. Now, again, he didn't really set Moto 2 on fire either, but he did eventually win a championship. And, well, nobody can ever take that away from you. So that's got to count for at least something. I mean, the Moto 2 championship is not an easy championship to win, but he did. So, but you got to think that, I mean, remember Dovizioso's contract with HRC? And remember how he forced them to make a three-rider team?
Yep.
So I could see LCR having three bikes, or I could see like another bike ridden out of the LCR garage that was just pure HRC bannering on it, you know, kind of like doing in 90, I want to say like 91 or 92, where the bike was that beautiful HRC with the red and the, what was that, 94? Anyway.
Got me.
I think that's the most beautiful NSR 500 that they ever had in a paint job. It was white, it was red and blue, and it was just beautiful looking. But I digress. I think something like that can happen. So, again, you've hit the nail on the head. That is, stay tuned. Let's watch where all the progress goes, and let's see what happens. You know, so we'll know more. Just, we have to give it time to find it.
Yep. And, you know, there's also one thing we're also forgetting, too. He may, you know, if they tell him, like, okay, Cal is going to leave, not this year, but next year when his contract is up, he might even slide into the test role for Honda, and he gets more exposure to work on his craft at the bike and gets a little more time. And because I think he would take that over a Moto 2 ride. Now, I know a lot of people are like, that's crazy. Why would you take a test ride instead of a racing ride? A seat, right? Well, there's a couple factors. One, if you're under contract with the factory already, and we all know test riders get to do one-off races, not this year, but next year, right?
Right.
And the second thing is, once you're out of MotoGP, it's hard to get back in. So if you stay there and everyone keeps you relevant and you work with the bike, you know, you're the European test rider, they really like that. They use the marketing of, you know, it's the Marquez brothers. And if you go back down to Moto 2 and get your leg ran over and you're hurt, well, it's going to be even harder to convince to come back to MotoGP. So he's got to think about all that as well. And I'm sure those negotiations are going on as we speak, because if he's got a good manager, which I sure hope he does, they're trying to secure him something somewhere before this even kicks off, because they know with this rumor, and it's not even a rumor because Paul confirmed he has the contract. He just doesn't know what to do with it right now, because it's like, I haven't even done a single race this year. I mean, he could come out in the KTM, could be lights out good, and he's like, I'm not leaving. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
I can't see him leave. I cannot see Paul turning down an HRC contract.
No, I don't either.
I just don't see it. I'm sorry. I just do not see that happening.
So. I don't either. So, but if he does leave KTM, that leaves KTM with a problem. Who are they going to put on their bike? And there is a rumor that Daniele Petrucci, who we all know is going to be leaving the factory Ducati squad after this year because Jack Miller is stepping in, that it was rumored that he went out to Austria to talk with KTM about riding that bike. Now, to me, this looks like a good win-win for everybody, because KTM, what they need right now is they need experience. They're not a team where they can really afford to keep taking on a rookie from Moto 2 to develop that bike. And that's a big reason why they bought Gianni Pedrosa in to help with the testing. That's why they like having Pol there, you know, and that's why they, you know, when they did take a chance on Zarco, it didn't work out, right? But that's what the experience they were looking for. So I think, you know, they'll be keep things fine-tuned and letting, especially like Brad Binder and, you know, some of the other guys, you know, figure the bikes out on their own before having to take over the whole thing. And of course, it keeps Petrucci on a factory ride in MotoGP. Anytime, it doesn't matter which factory you are, but just being on a factory in MotoGP, it's not a bad situation to be in.
No. I don't see this as a match made in heaven kind of a thing, but I do think it's a decent fit. It's, as you've said, you get the experience of Petrucci, who's been on a team, who has won a race, who has also had several good races, and he gets to ride on something different. And you also get Danilo Petrucci's vision of what a MotoGP bike is, because he's always had a Ducati. So he may bring something to the mix that you didn't think about to try or to put on your machine, because his style is going to be very much about how to ride a Ducati. Now he's riding the KTM. So you might get inadvertently something that you didn't expect would come out. And hey, if we move the engine this much, if we change the swing arm pivot, or if we do this, you might find that little nice golden nugget that makes your bike work really, really well that you wouldn't have gotten if you didn't have Petrucci on it. And you, like you said, you're still bringing all these Moto2 guys on there. But you bring up Brad Binder, and I am so pumped to see Binder ride this year. It's a learning year, but I think he's Rookie of the Year. I don't see anybody beating him for that title. Not at all.
No, he's definitely strong. I think KTM's, they're going in the right direction. Everything from their tests, like even Paul said, they're another team that has made some great steps forward. Now, have they made a big enough step forward to where they cover the gap that everybody else steps forward, and then they continue past that so they can start gaining back some of the distance that's between them and the current factory? Well, that's going to have to be a wait and see for sure. But definitely, I think, you know, Brad is definitely a strong case to have a great year and be a surprise in his sophomore year for sure, because Moto2 on the KTM, I think what you saw there was the Moto2 bike wasn't up to snuff. You didn't see Binder's full potential until that bike really got it together, and they got it together, and then you really saw him bring it to the front, and you're like, oh yeah, this is the guy that literally in Moto3 was dead last in a race and won. And you just have to remember, like, you have to catch up to every single person and the guy who's out front in clean air, and you managed to run everybody down. How much better you were on that day. Binder's got some special talents with him, and we could see that come to the front with KTM in the next couple of years. And it could be that perfect timing when he gets on that team, when KTM has had 5-6 years here. They've got that magical, like, season, that off season where they do something, they figure out something with the frame or the motor that brings that bike right up to the front with everybody else, and he gets on it right at the right time. So it could be something that we are going to see. And even this year, like, for all the rookies or you know, people with low experience, these double headers are going to help them significantly figure out the bike on a track for sure.
What's going to be massive is for the rookies to be able to compare data from 1 week to the next on a track that they have raced on and then raced on again. And you're going to see them cut some phenomenal time off of what they did the first weekend to what they're going to do that second weekend, because it's a direct comparison. Again, we kind of went over this earlier, but you can analyze, look at your strengths, look at your weaknesses, figure out where you had or didn't have a problem, and then actually get in there and dial it in and be really strong in that second weekend. And that's going to be huge for the rookies as well. It's going to be huge for everybody, but especially for the rookies. I think you're going to see Binder will probably make gains faster this year because of the back-to-backs than he would if we just raced everywhere once. Yeah, that's right. I had to think about that one in my head for a second.
So, yeah. All right, Jim. Well, you know, we kind of got through the news here. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up before we slide out of here for the weekend?
Just a quick note. If any of you ever followed IndyCar, you may have heard of a guy named Alex Zanardi.
Oh, and Formula One, too.
Yes, he was in Formula One as well. Yes, that's true. He is, I don't know, I want to say famous or is most widely renowned for the fact that he survived that very horrible IndyCar crash at the Lausitzring in Germany in 2001, where the car was T-boned and basically his legs were ripped off, if you will. He wound up coming back to race in touring cars with modified hand controls. He actually raced at the 24 Hours of Daytona last year. He is right now in a medically induced coma because he was racing his hand cycle in a race in Italy and ran into or collided with a truck, and they airlifted him out, and he is in a, you know, he had a 3-hour operation, and the neurologist who did the operation said that they don't know the extent of the injuries that he has, but they do know that his vital signs are good. But everyone, thoughts and prayers out there for Alex Zanardi.
Yeah, and Alex Zanardi is the comeback king. For him to do it one more time would not be anything strange. So I hope that he's got, that, you know, one more fight in him. This is a guy, and like you said, even hand cycle, like we're talking Indy cars, F1, went to touring cars, won races with hand controls. And he's like, oh, you know what? Since I'm paralyzed, I'll go ahead into the Paralympic Games. 4 gold medals from there as well. I mean, this is a tough, tough individual mentally. And we just hope he's got that toughness still to continue this fight and get himself out of that bad, severe situation that he's currently in. So, but yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That was one that I did forget to mention across when we had our news earlier. But once we go in there. All right, Jim. I think it's about time for us to get the heck out of here.
Yep, I agree. Just real quickly, right. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, especially to my dad, for having the courage to let me race a motorcycle. I appreciate that, Pop. So, Happy Father's Day to everybody.
Happy Father's Day, everyone. And remember, folks, don't forget you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/motopod. That's our Motopod fan page. You can like and subscribe there for any updates. We're on Twitter as @motopod. Or @moto_pod. You know, I've done that hundreds of times. You think I just had that on autopilot, but there you go. And so I'm on Twitter and Instagram at SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
MotoRGV on Twitter and Instagram.
Perfect. Alrighty, Jim. Well, it's good to do a like a check-in show.
Yeah.
But more so, we needed to talk about this calendar. That was the most important part. But I'm definitely looking forward to getting back to doing some regular race reviews and recaps and all that good stuff. So
me too.
I don't know if we'll have a show next week. Yeah, I guess it really depends upon the news. We might do a little quiet time right before the season starts, or we may just find something to talk about. I don't know. We'll see. But especially when the season starts, though, it's going to be every week. So
it's going to be coming fast and furious, people. Tune your ears up.
Yes, it is. So, all right, Jeff. Well, I'll talk to you later. Everyone else, zoom, zoom.